Russian attacks intensify across Ukraine.
Russian drone strikes have damaged buildings in Ukraine's capital. Local authorities say Russian strikes damaged 5 buildings in Kyiv.
Plus, will the Patriot missile defense system be headed to Kyiv?
They're actually an incredible defense system that has been used all across the globe.
And later in the program, an American comedian visits Kyiv. What happened when the air raid sirens started? We'll find out. Today is Wednesday, December 14th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Russian drone strikes damaged 5 buildings in Ukraine's capital. Ukraine's presidential office says at least one civilian was killed and 3 others injured over the past 24-hour period. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Ukraine's presidential office says at least one civilian was killed and 3 others injured in Ukraine over the past 24-hour period, and sustained fighting continues. Russian drone strikes have damaged buildings in Ukraine's capital. Local authorities say Russian strikes damaged 5 buildings in Kyiv, even as air defenses thwarted many more. Ukraine's president says the attack on the Kyiv area involved 13 Iranian-made drones, and a local official says the attack came in 2 waves. Iranian-made drones have been part of Russia's firepower in a string of attacks across the country in recent weeks. The strikes are a sign Ukraine's biggest city remains vulnerable to attacks that have devastated infrastructure and population centers in the east and south. Ukraine says over the same period, Russian forces launched strikes on 10 regions in central and southeastern Ukraine and intensified fighting in the eastern Donetsk region, the epicenter, over the past few weeks. The office update adds Russian shelling destroyed 2 technical university buildings in the city of Kramatorsk, which houses the local HQ of the Ukrainian army, while 15 towns and villages were shelled in the broader Donetsk region, with battles raging for the city of Bakhmut, which Russian forces have been straining to encircle amid fierce Ukrainian resistance. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A busy day on the European beat for Mr. de Ledesma. He's back with another story for us. This time, the people of Ukraine have been awarded the European Union's top humanitarian rights prize for their resistance to Russia's invasion and ongoing war.
The people of Ukraine have been awarded the European Union's top human rights prize for their resistance to Russia's invasion and ongoing war. The EU award, named after Soviet dissident Andrei Sakharov, was created in 1988 to honor individuals or groups who defend human rights. European Parliament President Roberta Metsola announces this year's award.
We meet to honor our 2022 Sakharov Prize laureates, the brave people of Ukraine, represented by their president, elected leaders, and civil society. Ukrainians who have already fought hard and sacrificed so much for their freedom and our values.
Metsola says ordinary citizens have stood up to face down Russian troops with nothing but pride as their weapons, adding, "We stand with Ukraine. We will not look away." I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Ukrainians leaving the eastern city of Bakhmut this week have described almost constant Russian shelling that forced nearly everyone to leave the city. Fiona Jones has the story.
Bakhmut resident Valentina knew she had to flee the eastern city after she was knocked to the ground by Russian shelling.
"It is very heavy shelling there, to the extent that I can't sleep at night. I had to do shopping under shelling. I did not think that it would go this far. I thought it would not be that terrifying, and I could not imagine that the whole city would be destroyed."
Residents there have described constant Russian bombardment, which has finally forced people to flee, shelter in basements and sleep in the bitter cold. Bakhmut, with a population of 80,000 people before Russia's Ukraine invasion in February, has become a symbol of warfare where enemy positions have rarely budged. Military experts say Bakhmut appears to be of little strategic value, but Russian forces have in recent days intensified their attacks. Valentina managed to leave her hometown with the help of Leonid, a military chaplain helping to evacuate civilians.
There are many children, a lot of them there. We have distributed humanitarian aid today. We cannot leave them hungry. Whenever we come to Bakhmut, we evacuate people as well as bring some food.
However, unlike Valentina, most people have turned down the offer to escape during his last venture into the city. The pair drove towards the Ukrainian-controlled Pokrovsk, just over 30 miles from Bakhmut, where they shared an emotional goodbye. From Pokrovsk, Valentina plans to travel to the capital city, Kyiv, to join her son.
As we reported in Tuesday's show, a conference of donors in France pledged more than $1 billion in aid to help Ukrainian civilians get through the cold winter as Russian forces continue to attack its power grid and other critical civilian infrastructure. Lauren Anthony from Reuters has more details.
Some 70 countries and institutions have pledged over $1.05 billion in immediate aid to help Ukraine get through a harsh winter. Russian forces have battered the country's energy grid and other critical civilian infrastructure, leaving many without essentials ahead of Ukraine's typically frigid season. France hosted a global meeting to discuss what could be offered to maintain water, food, energy, health and transport. His foreign minister, Catherine Colonna.
I'm talking about efforts worth 125 million euros in total from today until late March, the end of winter, which is our contribution in this conference to urgently help the Ukrainian population to survive. By the way, with regard to our country, this is the most significant humanitarian effort that has ever been mobilized by France in such a short period, in a very limited time frame.
Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal told reporters in Paris that Ukraine was grateful for that aid.
I had the opportunity to meet with representatives from donor organizations. And for us in Ukraine, this is a very powerful signal to show that the whole of the civilized world is supporting Ukraine. And we're very grateful to all the countries.
The conference was also an opportunity for French President Emmanuel Macron to display solidarity with Ukraine. He's been criticized by some European allies and Kyiv itself over the level of French military support. And his comments about needing to maintain dialogue with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
These airstrikes openly targeting the Ukrainian population and civilian infrastructure, these strikes whose Russia admitted only purpose was to undermine the Ukrainian people's resistance, amount to war crimes. They violate, without any doubt possible, the most fundamental principles of humanitarian law. These acts are unacceptable and will not remain unpunished. I want to be clear, in this context, it is up to Ukraine, the victim of the aggression, to decide on the conditions of a fair and sustainable peace.
The meeting also established a mechanism for Ukraine to submit its urgent needs. Donor countries can then respond promptly. A second meeting between France, Ukraine, and some 500 French companies will look into what can be invested to assist Kyiv in the short to longer term.
Lauren Anthony of Reuters reporting. The United States is preparing to send a Patriot missile defense system to Ukraine to shoot down incoming Russian missiles, a decision that could be announced as soon as this week. A U.S. defense official and a second U.S. official told VOA on Tuesday, both officials spoke on the condition that they not be identified because the decision has not yet been formally announced. The approval could be announced as soon as Thursday. On Tuesday, Pentagon Press Secretary Air Force Brigadier General Pat Ryder was vague when he spoke to reporters.
You know, right now, again, I don't have anything to announce. But we're going to continue to adapt, we're going to continue to stay flexible, and we're going to continue to work with Ukraine to ensure they're getting what they need.
For its part, the Kremlin said Wednesday that U.S.-made Patriot missile defense systems would be a legitimate target for Russian strikes. For more context on Patriot missiles, let's bring VOA's correspondent Carla Babb into the conversation.
Patriot missiles are able to shoot down weapons that are coming in to your territory. They're actually an incredible defense a system that has been used all across the globe. Most recently, I know that we've seen Saudi Arabia and Iraq have been have these missiles in place to shoot down potential attacks from Iran. We've seen them all across Europe as well. Slovakia has Patriots. Germany has Patriots. Greece has Patriots. So they're very effective. And the key here is Patriots can shoot down ballistic missiles. That's been a concern for the Ukrainian people, because as Russia uses ballistic missiles, they've got a series of weapons for their air defense so far, but none that have really been able to target ballistic missiles the way that Patriots will be able to do.
Well, that brings up my next question is, right now the Ukrainians are using HIMARS. How is that different from a Patriot?
Okay, so a HIMARS is actually, not to get a little too in the weeds for you, but HIMARS can be used to shoot different types of missile systems that are shorter range. They can shoot either something called a Gimler, which has a range of about, I guess, 90 kilometers, 50, 55 miles, we say in the U.S., or you can put a longer range missile in there, like something called an ATACMS, that can shoot further. And so HIMARS have been incredibly effective at stopping everything coming in to greater Ukraine, Kyiv, Kherson, all of those areas. And so what Ukraine is asking for now is to get longer range missiles into this HIMARS. In addition to the Gimlers that they have, they want these things called ATACMS, so that way they can shoot into Crimea. The concern in the Pentagon, their concern is that they do not want to escalate this war any further than it already is. And the fear is that a longer range missile could be used by Ukrainians to shoot down targets inside of Russia. Ukraine says it's not going to do that. And so the argument by critics here is that if Ukraine says it's not going to do it and has thus far used the weapons that the U.S. and NATO has provided the way that they've been asked to use them, what is the holdup here?
So what might have changed? Why does it look like the Pentagon will be giving Ukraine the Patriots now instead of months ago when they were first asked for?
I'm not exactly sure on what's taken so long, but I suspect it's because the Patriots, unlike some of the other equipment that have been provided, they take a really long time to train Ukrainians and to use these systems. This is not a system that a Ukrainian will be ready to use in just 1 or 2 months. It's going to take at least 6 months of training, likely, to get the Ukrainians up to speed to use something like a Patriot. And then on the flip side of that, I was speaking to another analyst from the Foundation for Defensive Democracies, retired Admiral Mark Montgomery, and he was pointing out that these are incredibly expensive systems to use already, about $3 to $4 million a piece per round that comes out of the Patriot. And so when you take that expense on top of the expense of the long training and the fact that the people that they're going to be training, those operators would have to be taken away from those systems to start training on the Patriots. So that is my best understanding as to why there has been a delay thus far from this building getting these Patriot batteries to Ukraine.
So if it takes approximately 6 months to get soldiers trained up to use the Patriot missiles, is that an indication from the Pentagon that they see this conflict going on a lot longer?
Well, the Pentagon has been clear that they do see this conflict lasting a long time, but they say that's because Ukraine doesn't want to give up. And as long as Ukraine wants to continue this fight, the U.S. and NATO allies have said that they are going to support them for as long as it takes. And so while we have no idea how long it's going to take, General Ben Hodges, retired General Ben Hodges, the former commander of U.S. Army Europe, has made a bold prediction to Voice of America. He says that if the United States and NATO keep supplying Ukraine with the weapons that they've been supplying them, he believes that the Ukrainians will be able to take Crimea and retake Crimea from the Russians by August, and also make significant gains in the Donbas area as well.
A bold prediction indeed. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Carla, thanks for your time and for your analysis this morning.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish. It's time to check in with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for our daily update. So the big story here is that there was pretty intense shelling in Kyiv last night. Are you okay? Can you tell us what happened?
Yes, well, actually, it happened early in the morning at around 6 a.m. So air raid siren went on. And in around an hour, more or less, first explosions were heard. What we have for the moment, we know that it was a drone attack. And this attack was targeting Kyiv region, Vinnytsia region, and Zhytomyr region. So basically, this is central west part of the country. For the moment, we have confirmation from President Zelensky about 13 Iranian drones that Russian forces used for this attack. And all of them were destroyed by Ukrainian air defense. So we know that there were no direct hits, and none of the energy infrastructure facilities were damaged or destroyed. And we know that this attack, it was also confirmed by the Ukrainian officials, that this attack was again targeting energy infrastructure.
Is there more of an update from other parts of the country? We heard a university building was hit farther to the east.
Yes, well, actually, there are attacks happening around the country, especially in the south and in the east. What we're hearing also, additionally to what you already said, that the building of local administration in the city of Kherson was directly hit today by Russian forces. No victims were reported, but damages of the building are quite sufficient. And we can see that these attacks are intensifying, and especially, you know, newly liberated areas, those that were recently under occupation but were recently liberated, they suffer these attacks, especially in Kherson and Kherson region. Also, we hear a lot about shellings of the Dnipropetrovsk region and of the Zaporizhia region. And if we talk about the Zaporizhia region, a lot of experts are actually, both Ukrainians and international, are actually expecting that and predicting that this region would be the next one for Ukrainian forces for conducting some additional and more intensive counteroffensive actions. And we can also see that, you know, the level of shelling is intensifying in that areas.
It's being reported, though not officially confirmed by the Pentagon, that the United States will soon be sending Patriot missiles to Ukraine. Are you hearing anything about that on your end?
Well, it is, of course, actively discussed in Ukraine, not officially again. I expect, actually, that Ukrainian officials would come with official statement when U.S. side would actually announce it officially. But for the moment, of course, this is discussed both within the society and also, you know, by experts and by different classes in Ukraine. So, and of course, this is a very, very positive news.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, thanks as always for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
As the world's attention is focused on Qatar and the World Cup, we too will take a look at football, or soccer, depending on where you live. The Russian invasion changed the lives of most Ukrainians in ways they could have never imagined, but amid the chaos, the country's soccer clubs have continued playing, and that's lifted the morale across the country. Melan Oshudliak reports.
In Ukraine, despite the continuous war and empty stadiums, football is still very much alive. FC Karpaty Lviv keeps playing games without an audience, as do the 43 other Ukrainian football clubs representing three professional leagues. The team stays in touch with its fans, even the ones fighting on the front lines, by sending them unique club chevrons and continuing to play.
We communicate with our fans on the front lines. They watch our games, even in the trenches. Some are recovering from injuries. We keep in touch.
You can easily find football club Karpaty fans in our 80th assault brigade and other units.
Since the beginning of the Russian invasion, FC Karpaty has already lost defender Artur Gritsenko, who died defending Kharkiv. In midsummer, the club founded a charity program, raising funds to buy drones, transport, and medical equipment for the Ukrainian army. The team wears new t-shirts for every game, encouraging fundraising.
For the season's first home game, we wore Save the Heroes of Azovstal t-shirts. It was precisely 100 days in captivity for Mariupol defenders. A t-shirt with the white cross and the words Kherson Offensive appeared when the Ukrainian armed forces began to use white crosses to mark their combat vehicles. Today, there are t-shirts saying Heavenly Punishment, promoting fundraising for drone makers.
This game was calm, but players often have to take shelter due to rocket attacks.
When you hear air raid sirens, you have to stop training and stop the game. A soccer match lasts 3 to 4 hours. We played 4-hour game with football club Alexandria because of an air raid siren.
Mikhail Odyanov, a freed Mariupol defender from the Azovstal plant, is invited for the symbolic first kick of the ball. Spectators couldn't attend this Ukrainian classical game between Shakhtar and Dynamo, but the club from Donetsk sold virtual tickets and collected over $16,000 that will go toward restoring the stadium in Irpin damaged by Russian shelling. At the same time, Andriy Shevchenko, who played worldwide for decades until retiring and entering politics, is fundraising for the restoration of the same stadium. With his help, Italian AC Milan donated $155,000. And while playing soccer during wartime can be dangerous, fans and players say it is an inspiring part of the fight against the Russian invasion. Emelianos Chudliak for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
And lastly, David Letterman, the American late-night TV host, traveled to Kyiv in October to interview President Volodymyr Zelensky for his Netflix show called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. The interview is conducted in the safest part of the city, a subway platform 91 meters below ground, when things got interesting and perhaps a little scary for the American comedian.
So to me, these two colors are the colors of the country where I was born and the country we're fighting for. Now, can you hear the siren?
Yes, I can hear the siren. What should we do?
Nothing.
In any other circumstance, that wouldn't be reassuring, but here with you, I feel reassured. What was that? What was the siren indicating?
На жаль, я повинен констатувати, що це означає сьогодні звичку, і багато українців звикли до цього.
Unfortunately, I have to state that it means that war has become a habit. Many Ukrainians got used to it. That's unfortunate, because I think that the war shouldn't be a habit. Sometimes we're so accustomed to sirens that we disregard them. We don't pay attention and don't move to a shelter, like we are in now, the subway, a bomb shelter, or basement. It doesn't matter where to exactly, as long as it's someplace safe. And to me, sirens are a reminder the war is not over. It was euphoria in the beginning when Kyiv was deoccupied. It was euphoria. The war is over, but it is not over. Just because your neighbor is not getting killed, or your loved ones, or your relatives, somewhere else our military are getting killed, sacrificing their lives. That is a reminder that somewhere, someone is giving up their life for yours.
David Letterman left his job as host of The Late Show in 2015 after more than 30 years on late-night television. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.